There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Carl Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 759, June 11th, 2018. Nasser?
Oh, Canada, so finger-licking good. And Ravi Shankar plays a winning tune at Silverstone. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, Chief Rogers.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Mercedes drops the ball. McLaren may need new leadership. Red Bull needs to make a decision and fast. Of course, we have another fantastic edition of Tech Talk with Tim and... we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. What I want to know, because I have missed out on the chatter since the race, are people complaining this was a boring race?
No, this was Canada.
Yes, because there cannot be a boring motor race, except for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix last year.
No, this was pretty good. Interesting. The best part was when Max had an opportunity to get into a big accident with Bottas at the start of the race, he didn't.
Well, you know, that was the deal. Sebastian was untouchable, which was not a surprise. And Max did not touch anyone, which was a surprise. But later in the post-race press conference, Valtteri Bottas said there was a little bit of touch and go. Not with the usual Max trademark.
So true. So true. But I was stunned. All of a sudden, I saw Max grow up in one chicane.
That's very true. He needed this. And the guy is an incredible talent, you know. Like when after the qualifying, he made a comment on the team radio, "I have not forgotten how to drive." And I don't think that was ever even in doubt. But hopefully he can keep it this way, and we just want good racing, you know, good racing, good finishes, and may the best man win, especially now that Danica is retired.
Exactly.
And this was Ferrari's first victory in Canada since 2004, but more importantly, their numero uno has retaken the lead in the championship. This is third win of the season for the Deutschen Junge Mann, and win number 50, this is very impressive, man. Win number 50 in his illustrious career, and only three other drivers, I believe, have 50 wins or more. Professor, Rapper, and of course, the Red Baron. I think, Clark, it's going to, some days Mercedes will have the upper hand, some days Ferrari, and some days maybe we'll have Red Bull do something, or Max do something. But, you know, it was obvious from last year's first part that regime change was... the revolution was coming. It was delayed second half. But I have a feeling that I will not be surprised. I mean, it's going to be between Seb and Lewis. We know that. But I just have a feeling that the red scare might overpower the silver streak. What do you think?
Yeah, there was a little bit of fumbling of the football at Mercedes. And not sure what's going on there. But they just, in a setting where... we are so used to seeing LCH completely dominate. That just didn't materialize. I mean, you could blame bad choice of tires, but it's still a Mercedes. So I was actually quite surprised that they were struck by spaghetti culture and, should we call it now, apple strudel culture.
Exactly. And the thing is, you know, Lewis was on his same engine seventh race, and they also had some overheating issues. But what I have seen with him, you know, I mean, there are races where he's totally like a no-show. And whether this was the technical issue or engine issue, I don't know. But he was basically a no-show in this race, taking into account the caliber that he is as a race car driver.
I completely agree, yes. For some reason, I don't know if it's mood swings or what have you, but he just didn't seem to be into it in Canada this time.
But he does bring a good entourage and company to the show, and nothing will beat bringing Justin Bieber to the podium in Monte Carlo some years ago.
This is a Bieber-free zone, Nasser.
This is a Bieber-free zone?
Correct.
So shall we talk a little bit about Colly, sir?
Why not? All those numbers, all those factoids.
Factoids. Did you watch the Colly also?
I did not.
Really? What were you doing?
I was cooking hot dogs.
Oh, really? Getting ready for the World 900 Top Car Race?
Correct. And, of course, we have Le Mans very soon.
Oh, yes. And who will be there?
Machismo.
Yes. And I was working on Saturday, so I missed out on the Colly also. But anyway, pole number 54 for Sebastian Vettel. This was Ferrari's first pole position in Montreal since 2001, when the Kirpin Kaiser was the El Padrino of Maranello. And those were the days, huh? That race in 2001 was won by a Schumacher, half Schumacher that is, ahead of elder brother and the uber dominator of the era, the Red Baron himself. Back to 2018 Colly. Bottas was the star for the Silver Arrows as he qualified second. His teammate and championship leader, Rappin and Racing Mr. Lewis Hamilton, qualified fourth on the grid after locking up twice in Q3. The amazingly talented and supremely confident Mr. Max Verstappen was looking man of the moment in Montreal, topping all three practice sessions and looking good to become the youngest pole position winner on Sunday, but it was not to be. And he qualified third. And, oh, I don't know if you... Did you watch the pre-race press conference?
No, because... well, yes, I did catch a little bit of it.
Oh, I love these. They do it with the drivers and the team principals. In the pre-race press conference in Montreal, he did declare that he will headbutt someone if he's asked a few more times about his mistakes and crashes this year. Obviously, anyone would get frustrated if you are asked about your mistakes again and again. But one has to be careful with choice of words. Some racing fans do have long memories, like elephants from Thailand, if not the Columbus Zoo. If one reads the history of Verstappen family, especially the anger management issues of Papa, Jos the boss, they will know what I am talking about. Row 3 was sponsored by Avis, number 2 and proud of it. Kimi ahead of Danny Boy. Both Renault cars made it to Q3. Nico was 7th and Carlito 9th. Pink Panthers were also in the top 10. Ocon 8th and Checo 10th. Now all rise for the judge, jury, and executioner of his own career, the one and only Fernando Alonso. In his 300th Grand Prix weekend, if not the 300th Grand Prix start, he failed to make it to Q3, but after 7 qualifying sessions this year, not surprisingly, he is the only hombre who has not been out-qualified yet by his teammate. It must be said, Zak Brown and Eric Bouyer were both at the recent IndyCar race in Detroit. Reports and rumor mill are going faster than Nando's GP2 engine Formula One car that McLaren will enter him in IndyCar racing full-time next season. This will be a great loss to Formula One, but a great asset to IndyCar racing. Hopefully the Oviedo overachiever will accomplish his stated goal. Driving for Toyota at Le Mans will most likely give him that, oh, what a feeling, and victory at the Brickyard will give him the triple crown. We all know he said adios to his triple F1 crown when he told Ron Dennis in Budapest, I am calling Max Mosley, and that is what I call the drowning of a great career by the Danube. This is one Hungarian rhapsody that did not play well. The list goes on. Romain Grosjean, another of our favorites, like Sam Bird, a sad tune from the Gene Haas Orchestra, started last on the grid. This time it was a case of Ferrari engine done blowed up, but he did predict his own F1 future by saying, and I quote, I'm getting the bad luck for next season and maybe beyond. End of quote. You may ask yourself, what else is new? Anything you want to say, sir, about the Colli, about the Nando, about the Romain Grosjean?
Well, Romain Grosjean, you know, he's a whiner. He continues to whine. But it's interesting that I think Eric Boullier should be shown the door. There's no progress, even with a different Renault motor. I mean, McLaren is still midfield. It's pathetic. And, I mean, what do they want to do? Enter a car in Indy and bring Fernando, which is a great idea. But, I mean, how is that going to help their Formula One team?
That's what I want to know. But what I read somewhere is that they want to enter him so he does not go to another Formula One team, like Mercedes and Red Bull are knocking on his door. And the idea is once the engine package or the whole, I mean, now we know it was more than just Honda at McLaren. Once they get going, once they sort out their issues, maybe they can bring him back to Formula One. But the way Nando has been talking about, you know, how Formula One is so predictable, this and that, I just think he has made a decision to do something else.
Absolutely. If he wins Le Mans, which he has a very, very good chance of doing, he will leave Formula One and come to America.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, with Toyota, no Audi, no Porsche. They have to have this guy win. Otherwise, what would be the point of having him being there and get beaten by Mike Conway and some other guy?
I agree. But on the other hand, a W is a W.
That's very true. That is very true.
So let's support El Macho.
No, it will be a very big news globally, and it will be very good for Toyota, and of course very good for Nando. And there have not been many drivers like him since I've been following this business since 1973. So this is not somebody who won a race and forgot how to race or how to be competitive, or as we have seen, you know, in recent years also.
Absolutely. And if he does come to Indy, the IndyCar series next year, that's going to be huge.
Yeah, you know, this Formula One people are talking about, you know, enhancing the show, making these changes. I mean, this whole global debate going on. I was thinking, you know, earlier today that remember when Bernie Ecclestone gave Ferrari like $50-60 million and they decided to leave the GP World Series, the breakaway series they were going to start?
Yeah.
I was thinking, man, if they give some money, $25-30 million to Red Bull and to Mercedes, and have Mercedes take on Ricciardo for next year and Red Bull take on Fernando Alonso, I mean, what a firecracker we will have in 2019. And they can do this if they want to.
They can do this if they want to. That would be insane.
I mean, just think about it. Lewis Hamilton against Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen against Fernando Alonso. And if they can get Charles Leclerc a whippersnapper, as you say, at Ferrari, boy, I mean, this will really spice up Formula One.
It would. Let's see what happens. I'm still in 2018, Nasser.
Oh, we are? Oh, damn. So shall we talk about the 2018 Canadian Grand Prix start?
Bravo.
Were you surprised that Red Bull, especially Max, was not able to take the lead even though he started on Hypersoft, I believe, right?
Correct. I was surprised that Max Verstappen didn't get pole to begin with because he dominated all three practices.
Yeah, but what I've seen, you know, that both Ferrari, to borrow a phrase from them, and Mercedes, they do have a, whatever it is, party mode or a last second oomph or some special Parmesan cheese and the spaghetti culture, they do come and take the pole.
I think it's the extra virgin olive oil.
Oh, straight from Sardinia?
Correct.
That's very good. Yeah, you know, when Seb took the lead and ran, that was a big bang. What did you make of the opening lap crash?
Pretty scary, actually, and I felt terrible for Brandon Hartley. I think it was a racing incident, and Lance Stroll didn't give him any room. He lost control, tried to get it back. I don't think anybody was at fault.
Yeah, well, these things happen, yeah, and a good thing is nobody was hurt. But I thought maybe this will allow LCH or Max or Bottas to get the jump on Seb. This was Seb's race, and I have to say, he drove a very smart and seasoned race. No mistakes, no panic or anything like that.
Very true. Excellent. Superb race by us. I haven't seen Seb dominate a race like this in quite a while.
Yeah, and this was a very nice performance. It was not a case of just he ran away from everybody. And good measured drive, a very sort of a thinking man's race, you know.
Exactly.
And of course, safety car is always, I mean, it's not a surprise in Montreal, but, you know, what are you going to do? And I was very surprised, you know, one thing I did like, that this is the track where Gilles Villeneuve won his first Grand Prix in 1978 in that beautiful, beautiful Ferrari 312 T3. And Jacques Villeneuve drove that car before the race. So that was a very nice touch.
That was very nice. Very, very touching and moving.
Yeah, and you know, amazingly, Seb winning for the first time for Ferrari in so many years, and on top of that, taking the championship lead, I thought he would be, you know, talking about that, how important that is. But even he talked about Jacques Villeneuve driving his dad's Ferrari and, you know, passion for Ferrari in Canada. Very, very impressive.
Very impressive.
Now, did you have any inkling that Bottas in the closing stages might take the lead and win a race, make up for Baku, which was obviously not his fault?
Not a chance. Bottas is a great number two, even for another team.
Yeah, you know, once you go like this against a grinder, big grinder, that is Lewis Hamilton or Michael Schumacher, it pretty much gives you the stamp, you know, number two. And it's one of those, you know, like the forever stamps, number two forever. But, you know, at one time he was closing in pretty quick, and I thought he might challenge for the lead. But when he made that mistake and lost like 1.8 seconds to Seb, that pretty much assured victory for Ferrari. But I think even if he had not made that mistake after passing Carlito, given the lap times posted by Seb, I think it would have been very difficult for Bottas to pass Sebastian and win the race, I mean, without a mistake. And that late done blowed up in Baku is proving very costly for his championship aspirations. Baku is the only race where he did not score a point. And, you know, very impressively, maybe this is what will keep Toto Wolff convinced to keep him on board. Bottas has finished second in four of the seven races so far this season, which is very good for a Constructors' Championship. And despite Ferrari winning in Canada, Mercedes still leads the Constructors' Championship. I've not seen any interview with, not yet, but I'm sure I will find something on the web, how Niki Lauda is feeling.
Didn't hear too much from Niki Lauda. I think he had indigestion.
Yeah, he's looking for some. Asti Spumanti. Okay, Max Verstappen. All eyes were on Dr. Marco's Wonder Boy, as the media has been on his case since his mayhem in Monaco. He was very edgy in pre-race press conference as one question after another was asked about his crashes and mistakes. And we talked about this, him saying, I have not forgotten how to drive. And on Sunday, he really demonstrated that. Feisty with Bottas at the start, but not losing or causing any loss of body parts on his car or car of the other driver. And it was good to see him on the podium in third place. And, you know, since there was a screw-up with the checkered flag, the actual fastest lap during the race was set by Daniel Ricciardo, but then they went back two laps to classify the race. So based on that, Max Verstappen got the fastest lap of the race. And this was his second podium of the season. The previous one came in Spain. Daniel Ricciardo, every race looks like this guy is increasing his market value. You think he's going to be staying here or moving on?
It depends. I mean, for some reason, Red Bull didn't understand. They didn't read the fine print. They were supposed to give Renault a decision in May, and Renault is pretty pissed off about it. So they have to make a decision probably right after the French Grand Prix.
Well, I think Renault said that we have till the May 15th to inform FIA. And right away, Christian Horner said they will make a decision on their schedule. And now they are saying that they will not make a decision at the French Grand Prix, which is the next race, but by or at the Austrian Grand Prix. And if this is going to be done at the Austrian Grand Prix, which is, of course, Red Bull's home, I have a feeling that, I may be wrong, but I have a feeling if they're doing this at home ground and not at Paul Ricard, Renault's home ground, that maybe they are going with Honda.
Yeah, but the biggest problem is Fernando has copywritten GP2 engine. Ah! So Ricciardo, if he stays at Red Bull, will have to come up with his own slogan.
No, but the thing is, you know, that's where FIA comes in. The GP2 is now called F2, so he can say F2 engine. Ah!
Bravo!
But you know, for me, the comment of karma supersedes anything I've heard in Formula One. I mean, that was classic. just one word, karma. And it came against a guy, Jolyon Palmer, that nobody will remember in a few months that he even raced in Formula One. But that's the way it goes. But going back to Ricciardo in the Canadian Grand Prix, the smiling assassin jumped LCH during the pit stop sequence and became Seb's best buddy of the day. Because of Lewis finishing behind him, Seb has taken the championship lead. Otherwise, I believe LCH would still be leading going into Le Castellet. Danny Boy has been on the podium twice so far this season. On each occasion, he was the race winner. In Canada, he was fourth. And like we said, he did set the fastest lap, but went to his teammate. You know, one thing I do like about Daniel and Max, I mean, they are pretty, lack of a better word, vicious competitors on the track, but they still talk to each other. This has not become like P.K. Mansell or Senna, Prost, and stuff, or, you know, even Rosberg and Hamilton. I mean, these people knew each other when they were kids in karting, and they became pretty nasty and mean to each other. But there's a lot of harmony at Red Bull, which is very interesting, and I'm kind of surprised, to be honest with you.
I am too. And I hate harmony.
I thought you loved eHarmony.
Nope, don't like it at all.
But that's another story. Okay, LCH was fifth. This was only the second race this season where he was not on the podium. The other was Shanghai. Based on what is expected from his caliber, as we already discussed, he was basically, I don't know, walking in LA or something, but not racing in Canada. As we have seen, this is quite common with him, and which... That part of the Lewis Hamilton race car driver, I don't like that too much. But, you know, nobody's perfect. Hopefully, this will give him new motivation for the French Grand Prix. Competition has not only caught up to Silver Arrows, but it is also getting crowded at the front. And I just hope that Red Bull gets a couple of wins, especially Daniel Ricciardo, so we can have three guys fight for the championship in the second half.
Very true. I can't wait. And can you believe it? We're going to France.
Yeah, man. I'm really looking forward to the... Actually, I was watching a little bit of the last F1 race at Paul Ricard 1990. And Mistral straight, man. What a beautiful straight that is. And Mr. Martin Brundle, whose work I enjoy very much, said during the telecast that championship number 5 will go to the driver who makes less mistakes during the season, and I have to agree with him. I think we're going to see Red Bull surprise everyone now and then, but normal course of business would be Seb versus Lewis and Ferrari versus Mercedes. Since you brought up the issue of Paul Ricard, who do you think will be the alpha dog on the Mistral?
Could be Ferrari. It's going to be pretty fun. It's going to be hot. The weather in southern France is going to be very warm, so I think it could suit Ferrari. And Red Bull, they're managing their tires much better than Mercedes.
Well, you know what it reminds me, Paul Ricard, even though it was at a different French track. Do you remember when they had the 2006 French Grand Prix? And it was the 100th Grand Prix, first one being the French Grand Prix 1906. And Renault was going very strong on Michelin with Nando, of course. And who rained on their parade that day? Do you remember?
I do remember.
Yes, it was a red car and a German driver. So I think history will repeat itself.
Very possible.
Yes. Kimi, Ferrari's stepchild and lost man of Formula One, was sixth. The team had a chance to put him again and put on faster set of tires late in the race, which I think would have been a good idea. But they played safe, as they have not forgotten the pit stop blunder from Bahrain. I have to say, you know, as a racing fan and remember the Kimi Raikkonen of McLaren days. And you know, this kid, well, he's no longer a kid. He's the oldest man in F1 now. But Kimi Raikkonen came into Formula 1 with less races, 23 to be exact, than Max Verstappen when he came into Formula 1. And Max came after a year in Formula 3. And Kimi came after a year in Formula Renault. So this was an incredible, incredible talent. And as a racing fan, I just feel very sad to see him and Nando languishing the way they do. I mean, can you imagine Nando fighting with Charles Leclerc and Pascal Wehrlein? It's just, it's a sad, sad scene. But Kimi did finish three of the first four races on the podium. You know what might be a good idea? Maybe McLaren should. Oh, this would be a very good, actually, a scoop here. McLaren started IndyCar team with Kimi Raikkonen and Fernando Alonso as drivers.
Why not?
Yeah, Kimi has experience in racing here anyway.
Yeah, but he's used to a camper shell.
Camper shell, that was something. Then he went rallying and truck and this and that. But, you know, to each his own. I think we're going to find out by Monza what's happening with some of these big-name drivers.
No doubt.
Okay, so now we come to Nico Hülkenberg, which is another sad story in a different way. He was seventh. He is now, of course, the driver with the most races without a podium. But as the Renault package improves, I am hopeful we will see Nico one day on podium in our lifetime. He has scored points in five of the seven races in 2018. In my opinion, humble opinion, I should say, his lack of success does not overshadow his immense talent. As we all know, Carlos Sainz Jr. is highly rated, and the young Spaniard has not become a serious flea in Nico's shoe. And Nico totally destroyed Esteban Gutierrez at Sauber, and Esteban came into Formula One with very impressive junior series winning pedigree. Carlito was 8th. He has scored points in all races except Bahrain, and his best finish was 5th in Baku. There is a lot of chatter on the web about him, especially if Danny Boy leaves Red Bull. Carlito has the talent to be the second Spanish driver to win in Grand Prix racing. I just hope he learns from his friend and fellow countryman that choice of teams is very, very important. Otherwise, it will be a very slow boat to Bilbao. What do you see? Where do you see this Carlos Sainz going next year? You think he's going to stay with Renault? Or,
I think he stays with Renault. They're making improvements. The Renault upgrades to the motor in Canada, I think, were somewhat significant. There's no reason to go anywhere.
Yeah, you know, I would like to see him there, and but I'm afraid that maybe, you know, Red Bull may not have more patience with Brendan Hartley and bring back Carlito and Toro Rosso, which I don't think they should do. You know, if he's going to go, he should go to the mothership.
I concur.
Okay, moving on to your French driver, Ocon, Esteban Ocon. He was 9th. The Pink Panthers don't have the bite they had last year. You remember how impressive they were last year?
Very impressive.
Yeah, that team was like Max Verstappen, you know, biting at each other and very aggressive. And due to the ongoing legal issues of Dr. Vijay Mallya, he has stepped down as director of company but remains the majority owner. He was once known as King of Good Times in his native land. And if the Indian government gets their hands on him, as you know, he's hanging out in England, and the Indian government has cancelled his passport. But if they get a hold of him, he may see a lot of bar time. And we're not talking about bars that are serving, you know, Kingfisher and Bud Light.
You're talking about vertical bars.
Yes, and the only beverage there is H2O. And even that is served at set times. But we'll see how that works out. Charles Leclerc, you know, we interviewed this kid many years ago when he was karting. He was 10th. He has now scored points in three of the last four races. He is really making a good name for himself. He now has 10 points compared to much more experienced teammate Marcus Ericsson, who has 2 points to his name. And of course, what else is new? Grosjean and Sirotkin remain the only drivers who are pointless, both in their tally and in their career path. Anything you want to say about the race, about the drivers and anything?
Like I said, it was sad. You know, Fernando's 300th Grand Prix doesn't even finish the race in a McLaren. I don't care what motor's in the McLaren. They got big problems.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, you look at Williams, because, you know, nothing is forever. You know, one thing I want to say about talking about McLaren, you know, lately I've been watching a lot of stuff, old stuff, new stuff, interviews, podcasts on YouTube. And just last 2-3 days, it just happened. I was not looking, but I saw some interviews with people. And man, now that Ron Dennis is gone from McLaren, boy, everybody's taking heavy kick to him, which is kind of sad. You know, not saying the guy was perfect, but, you know, did play a big part in motor racing history. And to see people just sort of like kick him down every opportunity they get now is not very cool. But anyway, Drivers' Championship, top five. So Sebastian Vettel leading with 121 points, 1 point ahead of Lewis Hamilton. Bottas is third on 86, Ricciardo 84, Raikkonen 68. In the Constructors' Championship, top five, Mercedes leading 206 points, Ferrari 189, Red Bull third with 134, Renault 56, and McLaren 40 points. Round two, as you already said, will be in 2 weeks. The French Grand Prix at Paul Ricard near Le Castellet. First visit to the circuit since 1990. I was going to go to this race, but then came the idea of going to Goodwood Festival of Speed with members of F1 Weekly Familia. So, Paul Ricard, some other day, hopefully.
Good for you, Nas. Keep up the good work, and I'm happy that we have a French Grand Prix. And Ralf Schumacher will be really happy because now there's no more cow manure smell.
Yes. Wasn't it that the French Grand Prix when Montoya and Ralf Schumacher were teammates that they had a big, if I remember correctly, Montoya went ballistic on the team radio?
Exactly.
It was a French Grand Prix, right?
Yeah, Manicool.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Manicool?
I have.
Really? Nice drive?
Yep, beautiful. A little stinky, but nice.
Really? Is it really stinky because of the cows and all that?
I'm just kidding, Nas.
Okay. Well, you never know.
There you have it. Anyway, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back with Tech Talk with Tim and Motorsports Mondial after this brief message.
Bonjour. Want to stay in a charming accommodation near the historic and famous Cognac and Bordeaux regions of southwestern France? Imagine yourself surrounded by the rolling hills and vineyards of the Charente region, sipping on cognac or the local aperitif Pinot de Charente. Opening in June 2012, Bassinon offers traditional French country lodging in rustic stone cottages, fully equipped with modern comforts, suitable for families, travelers, or groups. Share a home-cooked meal with your host and soak in the ambiance and joie de vivre of the tranquil and rural French countryside. Bassinon is only a 90-minute drive from the Bordeaux airport, or 30 minutes from the nearest train station in Angoulême. Navigate to bassinode.com for information or to book a reservation now. That's BASSINAUD.com. Allons-y!
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com, and now here's Tech Talk with Tim!
Hello race fans, this is part 2 of a 3-part series on ride height. Last time we talked about the concept of center of mass and how a car's distance above the ground can affect the car's stability during a turn. Now I'd like to speak about the relation between ride height and aerodynamic performance and introduce some other important properties that relate to car safety. F1 cars must have a flat plank at the bottom of the car, so there's no allowance for aerodynamic trickery there. This is most likely done for safety reasons. If a car is in part glued to the track by aerodynamics under the car, which interact with the ground, and if the car hits a bump causing an increase in ride height, the aerodynamics under the car may not function as effectively. That means that as the car leaves the ground, it's held to the ground with less force. Do you see why this could be dangerous? In engineering, science, math, economics, biology, and in many other fields, this behavior is called positive feedback. Don't be fooled by the term positive in the name. Generally speaking, positive feedback is very dangerous. It means that there's a cause and effect cycle that builds that leads to unbounded amplification. For example, the more a building tips, the more it feels gravity trying to tip it over. Forest fires generate air currents, and more currents help spread the fire more quickly. Heat causes ice to melt, and ice is a good reflector of sunlight, so increasing temperatures mean more sunlight is absorbed by the earth. So you can see why a car that depends on staying close to the ground for downforce is put at risk by a small disturbance to ride height. Even with flat bottoms, liftoff is not impossible in F1, and positive feedback is in part to blame. Take a look at Mark Webber, European GP 2010. His car struck the back of another car. Mark's front end lifted into the air, and as the front end lifted, air no longer flowed over the front wing in the normal manner to produce downforce. Rather, the air struck the bottom of the front wing, causing the car to tilt more and flip backward into the air. Thankfully, he was okay. On the other hand, negative feedback provides stability. People sweat when they're hot in order to cool themselves. People shiver when cold to generate heat. These are both ways to try to bring us back to a comfortable middle state. Can you imagine what would happen with positive feedback in these cases? There are only two possible outcomes, and neither one is survivable. There are many examples of negative feedback in cars which help keep the cars operating and racing properly. Springs in a car's suspension are a good example. The higher a wheel lifts up, the more the spring forces the wheel back down into place. Some feedback systems are controlled by sensors and electronic devices. Cruise control is a classic example, maybe the classic example of feedback control. If your car is traveling below the target speed, the computer requests that the car accelerates to reach the target speed. When traveling too fast, the throttle is reduced and the car is allowed to slow. With the help of sensors, computers, and robust programming, a car can be held stably at a desired speed. Now, I admit, this has been a little bit of a digression from ride height aerodynamics, but here at Tech Talk, I try to reach as many facets of engineering as I can. So back to ride height. Just because F1 cars have a flat bottom, that doesn't mean there isn't downforce to be gained. As air is forced under the car, it needs to speed up. It's a lot like sand traveling down through an hourglass. The fastest sand is at the constriction point, ignoring what happens once the sand falls through. Fast-traveling air experiences a reduction in pressure, so the closer the car is to the ground, the more the air needs to accelerate, and the more the pressure will drop underneath the car, which helps pull the car to the ground. This is called Bernoulli's principle, and the arrangement of a constriction to reduce pressure is called a Venturi. The diffuser at the back of a car is essential to this Venturi's function. The diffuser gives air a place to expand, so it helps promote smooth, accelerated airflow under the car and maintains the downforce. Without a diffuser, there would be all sorts of recirculating vortices and even pockets of low-pressure air behind the car, which would work to add drag to the car by trying to suck the car back. As the air passes over the diffuser and expands, pressure builds back to ambient. As the air fills the increasing volume of space behind the diffuser, the air gains some upward speed, and this upward velocity is another way to measure the downforce created by the diffuser. So, the next episode will be the 25th Tech Talk with Tim, and to thank you, the listeners, I'd like to give you a chance to get involved. I'd like to ask you, across all of F1 history, or even across all motorsport history, what has been your favorite technological development? Every year seems to bring something new. 2010 brought the F-duct. 2005 had mass dampers. And 1976 blessed us with the six-wheeled Tyrrell F1 cars. So, send me your favorite racing invention, and I'll give you a shout-out along with a short description of the technological breakthroughs that you want to hear about. Please send your ideas to techtimf1@gmail.com. That's techtim, the letter F, and the number 1, @gmail.com. Please submit your ideas by Sunday, July 8th, which is the date of the British GP. For the next episode, I'll also be discussing my favorite F1 invention, and that episode will also be the conclusion of our three-part series on ride height. So the F1 historians out there may already have been able to piece together what I'm going to choose. Okay, so please send me your requests, techtimf1@gmail.com, by the British GP, Sunday, July 8th. Thanks!
Tim, keep up the good work. Another zero on your paycheck next month. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, the king, the guru himself, Master of All, Nasser Hamid.
Sir, thank you. I want to ask you about a race that has not taken place, but is happening this weekend, the Le Mans 24 Hours. What do you think will be the impact of Fernando Alonso winning with Toyota?
It's going to be huge, and they're thinking of changing it to the Fernando 24 Hours.
I thought there's already a race going on there at McLaren by that name.
That's true. Machismo. But no, it's going to be exciting. I think Flavio's going to be there. I mean, Fisichella will be there. Heikki Kovalainen will be there. I mean, it's going to be fun.
Jenson Button will be there.
That's true. Jenson Button will be there.
Yeah, it's a fantastic event, I have to say.
It's going
to
be fantastic. It's live. They're already streaming live every day. They were doing the car inspections today. I mean, it's exciting.
You know, I got to tell you, have you ever been to this race?
I have.
You have? What year was that, if you remember?
1965.
Okay, so that was when you were a pumpkin. But anyway, when I was there in 2009, you know, the day of qualifying, I don't know whether it's Wednesday or Thursday, man, I could not believe in the evening how many people who I thought were leaving, and I followed them because there was a big traffic. And next thing you know, after 20 minutes of following these people, turns out these are people coming in for qualifying and parking in these big areas there. The crowd there is like first time you go to Indy 500. It just blows you away.
Exciting.
Yes, sir. And some English guy I met who had been to Le Mans for many, many years, he's a media guy, he once told me that you have to be there when the sun comes up in the morning. And well, one of these days I'll experience that, but we'll see. Okay, sir, now we're going to Texas Motor Speedway. For the IndyCar race, Scott Dixon was the winner for Chip Ganassi Racing. Did you watch any of that race?
I did a little bit, and you know what? They really need Fernando in IndyCar, because if it's not willpower, it's Scott Dixon or Sebastian Bourdais. We need new names in IndyCar racing. I mean, some of these guys have been around since the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, you know, Scott Dixon has been with Chip Ganassi Racing for like 17 years or something like that.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's Mark Martin all over again.
That's very true. That's very true. Okay, Formula E motor racing returned to Cuckoo Land after more than 60 years for the Formula E event in Zurich. Lucas de Grassi from Brazil 66 was the winner, and landing in second place was our favorite, Sam Bird. Did you watch any of this race? I have not. Have you on TV?
I did. It was a little exciting, but very quiet.
There are quite a few. This is a fantastic race to go to for interview opportunities.
Yeah, there's no noise.
Yeah, and all the big names are there.
All the big names are there. And, I mean, there's so many interviews that you've done with revving cars and everything. Formula E is really the interview heaven.
That's very true. That's very true. And at one time, Jarno truly was one of the drivers and slash team owner. But I think he's departed now.
Yeah, he's running the Trulli train.
And there you go. What, Disneyland?
No, over at Paramount.
Okay, good, good. Okay, now we come to WRC. They were in Sardinia for round 7 in the Italian rally. Thierry Neuville was the winner for Hyundai ahead of Ford Fiesta of Sebastian Ogier. MotoGP, Jorge Lorenzo winning and leaving Ducati. Lorenzo, man from Mallorca, won the Italian MotoGP at Mugello earlier this month. This was his long-awaited first win on a Ducati, and he celebrated this by announcing that for 2019, it was already in the air that he will be leaving Ducati, but people thought he might go to a satellite Yamaha team. But for 2019, he has signed his teammate to Marc Marquez, which means Honda is finally saying long-awaited sayonara to Barrichello of bike racing, that is Danny Pedrosa. Okay? And British Formula 3, this was interesting. They were in action at Silverstone, and guess who was there? Mr. Peter Brazier. He sent me a text from the track, and we shall meet soon at the Goodwood Festival of Speed next month. F1 Weekly medical staff, Dr. Farrington and Dr. Miguel, plus Mr. Adrian Wood, will also be there. So I'm really looking forward to seeing them all again and catching up on motor racing stories. Linus Lundqvist from Sweden won the opening race of the weekend and reached the championship. This kid is doing a very good job. Now, race 2 was won by Pawan Ravishankar of Singapore. And while on the subject of meeting F1 Weekly Familia at the races, a shout-out and very big thank you to our friend in the Netherlands, Mr. Louis Jensen, for his help in Dutch Travel Advisory, as we are planning a train trip to Zandvoort the weekend after the British Grand Prix to attend the European F3 and DTM event. And I'm looking forward to seeing our friend Mr. Inam Ahmed, who is now leading the championship, and hopefully he can maintain that lead. And there are some very talented drivers in this series also. like Marcus Armstrong from New Zealand, who is in the Ferrari driver development program. Your homeboy, Sascha Fenestra, he's with Renault. And Michael Schumacher's son, Mick Schumacher, is also racing in this series. Plus, we have all the DTM drivers. And hopefully, we can bag a good haul of interviews from there.
I'm sure you will, Ness. You know, you take these paychecks from F1 Weekly, so you know the pressure is on.
Oh, absolutely.
Bravo. That's called productivity.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Keep up the good work, Ness. I'm sure we'll get you press credentials for Zandvoort. But, yeah, French Grand Prix, man. I am pumped up.
You are, huh?
Of course.
Yeah.
The national anthem, the jet flyover with the tricolors, the grid girls, sweet loving.
Yes. No, it'll be good to see a classic race come back.
Especially at Paul Ricard.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, if you go on YouTube and look at I think it's the first few years of races at Paul Ricard, the early 70s, there are some aerial shots of this Mistral Strait, man. Unbelievable how long this thing is. I mean, absolute beautiful scenery.
It's going to be exciting.
Very important. You know, when I started, Ronnie Peterson was my first big hero, and his first Grand Prix victory came at Paul Ricard in 1973. So this place has a lot of emotional value for me.
Absolutely, and it's going to give you new motivation.
Oh, absolutely, sir. Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Any predictions?
For which race?
Grand Prix de France.
I think it's going to be Sebastian Vettel in a Ferrari.
I agree, except that I think it's going to be Fernando Alonso.
In a one-off for Ferrari?
Exactly.
And if Toyota does not win Le Mans when there is no Audi and when there is no Porsche, that's going to be very, very bad.
Toyota's going to win, trust me.
Yeah.
I think it's a done deal.
Yeah, I mean, they have no competition.
Well, you still have to, it's an endurance race, so you still have to finish the race.
Yeah, they have to, let's see how they engineer. What I don't want, you know, like in the other, I think it was at Spa that he won, like Alonso.
Yeah.
First, I mean, they had a deal that whoever is leading after the final pit stop, we will freeze the position. If they do something before the race, okay. What I don't want is some sort of a really political move where they rob some other driver so Nando can win. That's not going to be good.
No, Fernando doesn't want to win like that.
We don't want the Austrian Grand Prix situation here.
Bravo, Rubinho.
For Fernando will anyway, even if the wall comes crashing down. No pun intended.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But, you know, it's interesting. I had a Brazilian customer who couldn't speak English a couple of days ago. So I went up to him and I said, Felipe Massa. And he goes, oh, yes. I go, Rubinho. He goes, oh, yes, number two.
Did you say Ayrton Senna or Nelson Piquet?
I said Ayrton Senna. But then when I said Fittipaldi, number one.
Yeah, I can guess his age group then.
Thank you very much. I want to thank everybody who listens. We'll see you in France. Good night.
Thank you very much for listening, and bye-bye.